guess it's much easier to focus on strategy than identity.
Ooh.
You know?
Whoa, that is a power line. Hang on, I'm going to type that down. What? It's easier to focus on strategy than identity. Jeez. Chinese car market is consistently better, cheaper. I mean, in South Africa, they were telling me they have unlimited warranty on some Chinese cars. Unlimited warranty. Show me one German car that's got unlimited warranty. There's no, it's impossible. And so, again, it's not strategic, it's awareness. And I keep telling my audiences, it's not an intelligence. I'm not telling you stupid. I'm just telling you lacking awareness of new business models and new opportunities. And that's not because of intelligence. In fact, the more intelligent you are, the more you're addicted to only solving things in intelligence ways, not in consciousness ways. Hello, 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 and welcome to this week's expansive podcast. Thank you for all the regulars to keep checking in. We actually did a ChatGPT sort of search on the podcast and its listeners. And actually it said, once somebody starts listening to the podcast, people never stop. It kind of, they stay in the loop. So for our regulars, welcome back. For our newcomers, welcome. Expansive podcast is all about talking about things that expand us into better human beings, evolve us into better business people, into better humans, better empathy, and also a place for Eric and I to bitch about things we don't like and make it a bit of a soapbox as well, how it's evolved. You see, we've been doing this for 250 episodes. Eventually, the expansiveness of life is kind of, you should have listened to the first 200 episodes. The last 30 episodes have just been Eric and I bitching about life. So welcome to it. Eric, welcome. How are you? Welcome to your podcast.
It's so funny because yesterday you called me and mostly just to have a little bit of a, like a go at life and like you need those moments. It allows you to feel a bit lighter and to process what's happening in the world around us. And yeah, it's funny how the expansive has also become, I mean, it's actually always been in a way like a bit of a therapy session for us. So like we've always come into this thinking, well, these are the things that we are dealing with in our lives and let's discuss it for everyone to listen to.
Yeah, look, I think we're all going through stuff, right? And I think a lot of us are frustrated with a lot of things that are going on in life.
Yeah.
And also nice to share other people's frustrations, because I think also people that don't really know us, that know us from online, you know, we're only putting out stuff about what we work and how we do it. But to go into a deeper place around some of the frustrations we have, which I don't know if social media is about always sharing your frustrations. Or have you seen that tall, good-looking black guy? I don't know his name, but he's mocking people. So he shows you videos of people.
Oh, yes.
Then he goes and mocks
Paul
them,
Lima.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
He's brilliant. Love him.
Yeah, yeah.
He did this one about people crying online. And you know, when you watch somebody crying online, you just take it for what it is, right? But then what he did was he set up the camera to cry online. Then he set up the camera to show your hand trembling. And he's like, hang on a second. So what you're doing is, you're fine, right? You set up the camera, then act. Like,
It's performance.
And so I don't know if social media is always about crying. And I don't think it should ever be about crying. But anyway, that's just my opinion. But also just to bitch on social media is also not a cool thing, because that's also, you want to uplift, you want to inspire, you want to share cool things that are happening in your life. So I think this podcast gives us a nice opportunity to get real and get gritty about many of the things that do frustrate us. And I imagine shared with our listeners as well.
You know, something I've always noticed when I'm hosting events, like especially back in the day when I was hosting Betterman events, is that at some point you kind of open it up to the audience and people are sharing some of the frustrations they are going through. And you feel like what you are doing as an event organizer is that you are providing value through the content that you deliver in that session. But actually what most people take away from it afterwards is, oh, I feel like I'm not the only one going through this. That's almost universally what people find most valuable in those sessions, is that yes, the content is good, but to be honest, we've heard most of the content by now. Like, there's nothing new under the sun. You know, you've heard all of the self-development things that you need to hear in your life. what actually is most useful to you is to know that there are other people going through it as well. And by knowing that they are going through it, it in some ways lightens your load and it gives you a bit of hope that if they can deal with it, then you can deal with it. And so I think that's what the pod also aims to achieve. And I've always thought of it as the backstage, you know, because that's, we spend most of our lives on stage. And this really is coming to chill with us in our studies, in the hotel rooms, to talk about the things that we are going through. And I think that's also why the pod isn't not a heavily business focused, like we went down that route and it didn't feel right for what we're trying to do here. We want you just to enjoy hanging out with us. We bring cool people on like Dandapani. And how cool was that chat as well? And like, he just relaxed into the environment. It was so much fun having him on. And I think that's what we're trying to cultivate here.
Yeah, it was also great. Yeah, it was great to have him. And I watched him in the Cody Sanchez interview that he did after ours. And he was very serious. And I remarked to you on WhatsApp offline. And I said, you know, he enjoyed our podcast more because it was just banter. You know, and it's just banter. It's just, yeah, you know what it is. And you're just talking about real things. You don't have to be serious about everything all the time, you know. So I was at an event yesterday, and a two-day event. And it's called Futurists. I mean, I don't know how to say this nicely, but jeez, the speakers were terrible. Terrible, terrible, shocking, disgusting, shit in all ways. Sorry for any of the organizers listening to you.
Yeah, that's, I think it's very subtle. Very subtle. No one will notice.
I'm just giving you the nuance of my emotions. I'm not really giving you my full emotion. And my rant to you, Eric, yesterday was very much on the fact that these people are on the top of their game. You know, the people that have set up this conference, they really are very well-known people. And sitting in the audience, I felt it felt like a kick in the stomach. And so what I did the first day is I sat through all the talks cringing. And the second day, I literally had to leave. I couldn't even sit there anymore. And it took me a few hours to defrag myself from the utter shit they were speaking. And you know what always like amazes me is that these people are helping major organizations prepare and they don't know what they're talking about. And we had the CMO of a massive, I'm not going to say the company name, a massive global multi-billion dollar business and the head of innovation. And both of them, with all respect, were Muppets. Muppets. They did not say anything fresh, anything new. And, you know, I remember listening to Michelle Obama talk about the fact when she sits at the tables with all the leaders in the world, she often, if not more than not, she thinks to herself, how did you end up here? Like, how did you get onto this table? Like, you're dumb as shit. Like, what is going on? You have no empathy. You have like, and it's funny because when you go to these places where these big names are, and to be honest with you, I'm so excited to listen to the CMO. Look, I'm always excited to listen to anybody. Like, yes, I want to learn something. I'm actually desperate to learn something. So like, give me something to learn. I'm always open. And you know, the definition of intelligence is holding two opposing thoughts in your head at the same time without having a leniency towards one or the other. And I love practicing that because I know that I don't know everything. But I also know that intelligence is also the sign of adaptation. It's like, I know that my strength lies in me releasing identity, being inspired to evolve myself. And so I'm always going to these conferences with open hearts and open mind to ready to listen. And I feel like they are so lucky to be where they are because, to be honest with you, they're speaking about an old world that does not exist anymore. The way they are doing strategy is done. It's done and dusted. And I feel bad to say this, but I think anybody that's wearing a blue suit and a white shirt that's over 55, 60 years old talking about futures, dude, stop it. Stop it. Go be a banker. Go be a strategist. You're not a futurist bum, bro. Honestly, I'm still a bit frustrated by it because I'm still like, what? Anyway, so that's my first rant.
Yeah, I want to just say, I think everyone has become a futurist. It kind of feels to me like that. That I remember a few years ago when I was running, like Better Manners popping up this week for a few times. I don't know for whatever reason, but when I was running Better Man.
To reminisce about when you were skinny and good looking. I know. And I saw the pictures. I was like, wow, you used to be so good looking. Look at you now. What the hell happened?
I was really skinny back then. I mean, you were always good looking, but really skinny back then. Yes.
Look, I mean, good looking back then.
I mean, I'm getting back to that.
The curviness around your face has kind of taken that chiseledness away. You know what I mean?
Don't you think the beard is providing enough definition?
I think the beard's covering the curves.
Why do you think I grew a beard? Curves.
No, you're still good. You're still good looking. Yeah, okay, right.
So as the community grew, the guy said to me, can you do coaching? And so I was like, I don't even know what coaching was back then. I kind of had an idea, but I didn't actually know what the discipline meant of coaching someone.
Yeah.
And so I found all the books that I could find on coaching. I read all of them. I tried to create my own models. I started coaching people. Looking back, it was terrible and like not even close to what coaching should be. But I started doing it. And I remember in that moment that at that time, everyone was just starting to be a coach.
It was just like
this big movement. Everyone was a coach.
Yeah.
And then because of that frustration of everyone doing it, I was like, okay, but I need to find a way to stand out. And that's how I ended up doing my master's to legitimize it a bit more and to give me a bit of sort of a more firm backing for what I'm doing.
Mm.
And also just to help me be better at it. But that then was like to try and differentiate from everyone who's just waking up and going, I'm a coach. And I feel like we've kind of entered into a space where everyone wakes up and they go, I'm a futurist, because AI is obviously changing so many things at the same time. And therefore, everyone is making a prediction about what AI is going to do and not going to do and what the world's going to look like and not going to look like. And I was watching this video from like this most random guy. And he was like, you know, if you want to understand like where AI is going, you have to look back to the future. And like, he talks about the industrial revolutions and stuff. But I'm like, he's just like a random dude who's not trying to figure this stuff out. And I realized that everyone now has maybe because it feels like the future is really at stake, that people are sitting here trying to make predictions about what the future is going to be. Everyone is futurist.
Well, futurist is not a prediction machine, bro. That's not what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
And the whole event was, we should do more of this. We should be adaptable. You should be, I'm like, yes, everybody knows what they should be doing. Why is nobody doing it? That's the point. And it's because even the speakers themselves don't know how to do it. So it's just constant sound bites, TikTok soundbite, YouTube soundbite, all these sound bites put together. And now you have these super nerds coming out and getting some attention because they put a bunch of sound bites together. And in fact, I watched a futurist in Peru. And he left the audience more scared than inspired just because he was talking about all the things that technology is doing. And you're like, so what? So everybody's got access to that. Tell us how to prepare. And nobody's doing that. Everybody's just lambasting the audience with you know, trying to be clever. In fact, you know, when your talk is about you being clever and not actually helping the audience understand something new, go home, bro. Go home, darling. Don't go to the audience. You're making yourself foolish. And also, I mean, I don't know about you, but I get so many people asking me, how do I become a speaker? I really want to be a speaker. I'm like, dude, it's not an easy thing. One, two, there's no circuit to get on. Three, there's no agent that's going to help you evolve yourself. It takes time and effort to become a thought leader. Years, in fact, years to become a thought leader, to position yourself as that person, to constantly evolve yourself. But people almost think it's easy. You're like, oh no, get up on stage. Yeah, just give it, you know, 10 slides. Just copy something from Google and you'll be good. I've reached my limit. You know, I'm going to Singularity University's 2-day summit in next month, 22nd and 23rd of October, which I'm really looking forward to.
That's here in SA, right?
And I'm just scared. Yeah, and I'm just scared it's going to go through the same thing because I'm looking at the topics and I'm like, wow, that's an interesting topic. This is an interesting topic. I'm really looking forward to this speaker. And then, you know, it's like I sit there and I'm hoping this doesn't happen, but I sit there and I'm like, oh, that wasn't that good. Oh, that wasn't that great. Oh. And then by the third one, I'm just sucked out of energy.
I think what people love to do at these conferences is to show all of the doomsday scenarios, because we can look at all the tech and we can push it to the extreme and go, oh yeah, like, you know, be scared because it's going to take your job and do these kinds of things to your future. But like you say, it kind of leaves people feeling empty and they don't know what to do with it. What would you have liked to have seen at the conference? Like what would you have liked to have seen on the agenda?
You understand. That's a great question. Thank you. I think the thing is it's too heady, as in it's not conscientious. It's not emotional. It's very strategically minded, not consciously minded. And I think this is the bridge that I have is I'm doing all the consciousness work and they don't realize that if you don't do the consciousness work, the currency of the future is not better strategy. It's higher levels of awareness. And higher levels of awareness is almost right now put into the category of mindfulness, yoga, hippy-dippy, sandal-wearing, lentil-eating people, you know? And it's not that. And so what's happened is the corporate world has broken it up into the HR hippies who want to do mindfulness and then everybody else that must do stress strategy, right? And there's no mix between these two, because if there's a mix, there's somehow you get called out by the finance bros who are sitting there who have minus 55 in consciousness and awareness. So they diminish and demoralize anybody that's coming in with that sort of talk. And so you sit there with a lack of consciousness and a lack of awareness and keeps drumming in old ideas of strategy that literally don't work, because if they did, Zara wouldn't have lost 50% of its market share. The German car market wouldn't be dipping like it is dipping, which is never coming back. Chinese car market is consistently better, cheaper. I mean, in South Africa, they were telling me they have unlimited warranty on some Chinese cars. Unlimited warranty. Show me one German car that's got unlimited warranty. There's no, it's impossible. And so again, it's not strategic, it's awareness. And I keep telling my audiences, it's not an intelligence. I'm not telling you stupid. I'm just telling you lacking awareness of new business models and new opportunities. And that's not because of intelligence. In fact, the more intelligent you are, the more you're addicted to only solving things in intelligence ways, not in consciousness ways. So what would I have liked to have seen in the speaker lineup is somebody talking about awareness, somebody talking about consciousness. I mean, I was telling you yesterday, there was a guy who was running for the governor of California. He's a transhumanist and, you know, fairly nice guy. I said to him, you know, everything you're talking about, nothing has got to do with nervous system.
Just explain what transhumanist is for people who haven't heard that term before.
Oh, it's transhumanism is combining technology and humans to evolve, right? But what they're not understanding is that we haven't tapped into our consciousness. We haven't really tapped into our nervous system's potential, and we just haven't done those things. So what we're doing now is we're getting computers to try and help us evolve us. And I think there is some level of understanding or potential there. But do you realize we are unlimited beings with unlimited access to unlimited information that we are not tapping into, that's really been kept in the realm of Indian gurus, like, you know, Tibetan monks. That's kind of where that world lives. And then you come into the corporate world, you are dealing with a two-dimensional meathead that is got a level of IQ that's maybe a little bit higher than average with a good way of storytelling, and then comes out and starts talking absolute, utter rubbish that is really worth you speaking about in the 1990s. And the minute I asked him, I asked a few questions. I was like, what about nervous system? You didn't mention the nervous system once. And if your nervous system's stressed, you're not aging well. Or what about Einstein's idea that the medicine of the future is the medicine of frequency? Like, he had no idea. He had no answer. He had zero response, which means that he's so stuck in old ways of thinking that he has just no evolution of a humankind. So I don't know, you know, like I go to Dr. Joe and I'm like totally enthralled. And he's talking about a new aspect of reality. These people are talking about VHS systems and trying to make VHS systems compatible with CDs. That's what they're doing. They're like, they're talking about such old ideas and then also clapping and going, wow, this guy was so clever. Really? You told me how to run a VHS machine better? That's not clever, bro, at all. So yeah, I'm obviously still frustrated by it, but here we are. Thank you so much for the question.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really interesting. Most conference audiences, I think, struggle to be challenged, you know, because, and I think that's why, especially overseas, why motivational speakers actually do so well is because it's more about making you feel good than about challenging you. And it's tough, you know, when you're sitting in that audience and like you have to adopt a new paradigm. Like that's a big ask from an audience. And I think for most of these guys, like they just kind of go with what's going to help them be more popular and like get their applause rather than provoking or challenging people's perspectives. Yeah. But in some ways they need both, you know, like you need people who's going to just kind of feed into the system and then people who's going to break the system.
Well, when you're feeding into the system, you shouldn't be a thought leader because you're feeding into the system. You're not explaining anything new. And the second thing is it's dangerous to keep patting yourself on the back and going, no, you're going well, don't worry. No. And the reason, and it always comes back down to the fact that most of the speakers are dum-dums, emotionally dum-dum. They've got the degrees, they've got the MBAs, but they're stuck in the exact same paradigm their customers are stuck in. They're all singing each other song tunes. They're just singing each other song tunes over and over and over, reconfirming, regurgitating all within that sort of cycle. And then you look at these people and they're earning an immense amount of money recycling rubbish. And you think to yourself, wow, the whole system's sleeping in many ways. Yeah, it's frustrating, you know? I mean, even the Museum of the Future, yeah.
I haven't been to that. What about it?
No, even them, you know, I met with their executive directors. They had no clue what I was talking about when I started talking about awareness. Zero. And they've never invited me to speak there. I mean, I'm not even part of their, because I'm not academic. I'm not heady enough, you know? And because they're not conscious, they just don't understand that the evolution of humankind is what's required. And that's what AI is going to do. Nah, they're just ignoring it. Not seeing it.
I guess it's much easier to focus on strategy than identity.
Ooh.
And
whoa, that is a power line. Hang on, I'm going to type that down. What? It's easier to focus on strategy than identity. Jace. It's easier to focus on.
Don't strategy. Steal my line. I'm watching you.
That's mine. What are you talking about? That's my line. That's
my line.
Brilliant. No. Okay, tell me about identity. Yeah.
Yeah. No. I mean, because ultimately that's what all the change that we speak about comes down to is that, yeah, you can think about all the newest moves that you need to make and the newest tech that you need to bring into your business. But ultimately, it means very little if you can't bring the identity with you. And I think, and it's so funny because like I was doing a talk last week. My talk essentially is kind of building up a little bit about the future, but mostly just sort of like cool stuff. I'm not trying to scare people. I'm just showing them like the cool stuff. And then we move into, we are stuck between two worlds. We are stuck between a world where we had a map that told us how to navigate the world. And then we are standing at the edge of a blank map that we have to move into new terrain. And what makes it difficult for us to cross that threshold into the new terrain is that it requires us to change. And change isn't just what you do, change is who you are. So the very first thing that I talk about then is like, well, if we are going to make that step, what are the best questions we should be asking ourselves? And the question we often want to ask ourselves is, am I being open to change? And that's actually the wrong question because we all like to think we are open to change.
Yeah,
everybody does. You know, yeah. And we delude ourselves. And especially like if you are sitting in a conference room and you have like all the execs and all the managers looking at you, like no one's going to put up their hand and go, I'm not open to change. Like that's frowned upon. That's like, it's a corporate sin to do that.
Of course.
So, but of course, we aren't always open to change. So we say I am, but we aren't. So we are just lying to ourselves about it. So instead a much better question is just, what am I defending? And the moment you can identify that, you realize, oh, what I'm defending mostly is my identity. And therefore I'm actually not making the changes.
Look, I start off my talk with this is about the transformation that we're going through requires us to unlearn. And none of us know how to unlearn because unlearning requires you to let go of an identity. Unlearning is it's just letting go of an identity. That's all it is. And people are addicted to their identities, are addicted to their lives, even though they don't like their personalities.
Even more than that, the challenge is for us as individuals, we have an identity that we need to let go of. As a team, you have an identity you need to let go of. As an organization,
Organization
you have an identity that you need to let go of. And I mean, geez, like when you work one-on-one trying to get someone to see that shift, that's really tough. When you are trying to get a team or organization where people create self-fulfilling prophecies by holding each other accountable to the old version, to change that is a totally different story.
Oh, I think it's almost impossible, Eric. Honestly, I think it's impossible. I don't see it happening anywhere, really. Do you know anywhere? Can you give an example of where a whole group of people?
Yeah, I can give you one example. So I recently, well, it's also part of my talk actually, but I talk about Garmin and their transformation. Think about this for a moment. So Garmin was founded in 1989 and they were initially selling GPS devices to for small boats and planes. 1998, they launched the first in-car navigation device, the Street Pilot, that goes onto your windscreen. And like it just blows up. It's the perfect timing for GPS, right? And so over the next like 8 years, from 2000 to 2008, they go from $340 million in turnover to $3.5 billion in turnover. And at that point in 2008, in-car navigation devices account for 70% of their sales. Then, you know, everything feels good and it feels like, you know, we are on a highway to like reach them and things can't go wrong. And of course, it always feels like this just before everything changes. And everything was about to change for them because the year prior, Steve Jobs steps onto stage and he releases the iPhone. The year after that, Google Maps is released. And so all of a sudden, when you put those two together, Garmin has to watch their entire business model being given away for free. And so initially, they actually launch a smartphone to compete with the iPhone, the Nuvi phone. And of course, it's like a terrible failure. Like no one wants to use it.
Yeah. I didn't even know
but
there was
then they realized that, no, that's almost exactly the punchline of the joke. But then they start looking and they think, well, you know, what we are really good at is like at our core is GPS. And we can apply it in different ways. So they look around and they find that there was actually an employee side project that was being run all the way back in 2003 already. That was called the Forerunner 101, which was the first GPS-powered fitness tracker. So they launched this back into the market again. They find some success initially, enough for them to double down. By 2015, they are doing $1 billion in sales in this outdoor and fitness tracking segment. By 2018, they are back to like their 2008 glory days. But this time, the in-car navigation devices account for like 18% of their sales. And the outdoor fitness tracking segment is 50% of their sales. Fast forward to today, it's 60% of their sales and in-car navigation devices is 10% of their sales. And the most mind-blowing thing for me about this is that they've gone from a company that was known for the thing that goes onto your windscreen to today, if we talk about it, we all know it's the thing that goes onto your wrist. Like it's this beautiful transformation that happened right in front of our eyes. And they were able to let go of their existing territory, which was GPS devices, to try on something new.
It's a brilliant example. I didn't know that, so thank you so much for that. I'm still a bit confused at 10% of their market is still in car directions.
Yeah,
in this day and age, people are still buying in car direction. Why? Is they special?
I think there's still people who might like just like the old school thing that goes into your windscreen, but I also think it is built into. It might be licensed, for example, to BMW. That the in-car navigation that you have built in is powered by Garmin. I think it might be something like that as well. Yeah. But it's just such an awesome transformation story, dude.
But was there one CEO throughout this process or who was it that ran this?
That's a good question. It was started by two guys called Gary Burrell and Min Kao.
Yeah.
And I want to say that they oversaw the entire thing. Like I think they only recently may have stepped down. I know the one guy has passed away.
Because I would like to actually study them.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's such a great story about a company that was able to transform from something that was like very core to their identity to something totally new. And if you look at Garmin, I mean, they keep coming up with like, so even when the Apple Watch came out, it gave them a bit of a like a shock, but they were still fine. You know, they did well because Garmin was a fitness tracker and not a smartwatch, and the Apple was a smartwatch, but not really a fitness tracker. So they defended their niche very well. And I recently saw a new...
Yeah, I mean, look, if you're a real athlete, you wear a Garmin.
That's it,
you know?
That's it.
So, I mean, and I'm surprised, how did they let you wear a Garmin?
No, I don't wear a Garmin.
How did you get one?
I don't
one?
Wear a Garmin.
Oh, no wonder. No, I figured out.
But again, you wear an Apple Watch, right? So
I'm not an athlete. I'm just a model. I'm not an athlete. I'm a fitness model, bro.
Okay, well played. Well played.
Yeah. I don't have the height for a model. That's your territory. It's so funny, you know, when I see you in real life, I'm like, Jesus, how tall are you, bro? What the fuck? You're like massive. Like, Jesus, I don't realize how tall you are when I'm online with you. Yeah. Okay, yeah, sorry, carry on.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good example of a company that was able to change its identity.
Yeah. Look, I mean, that is a needle in a haystack, bro.
I agree with you.
A fantastic story. I haven't heard many of those.
Yeah, when I've been going down this rabbit hole because I've been creating videos about the reinvention of companies. And what I find is that there's typically two things that happen. One is that there's a core that is defended, and then there's an outer shell that is evolved. In Garmin's example, you know, I don't know how to phrase it perfectly just yet, but in Garmin's example, GPS technology was obviously the thing that they kept, but the application of that they changed. So, and that ultimately was part of their identity change. Le Creuset, which is the French cookware company, they went through a very similar reinvention. They were almost bankrupt, and a guy called Paul van Zuydam stepped in and he resurrected the company. And he's actually South African, by the way. Like, or he was born and he grew up in South Africa. And in 1998, he bought Le Creuset, and he took it from a company that was like pretty much bankrupt to a company that's doing like $700 million in turnover today. They are in more than 40 countries. And again, when you look at him, or when you look at the expansion of Le Creuset, so the thing he protected was that the French really valued their craftsmanship. He wanted to protect the identity of like the craftsman. So he could have outsourced it to Asia and have, you know, a much cheaper production line, but he kept it in France at twice the cost to protect that identity. But then at the same time, what he evolved was new product ranges, new automations in the company, many more like, you know, color options and things like that, obviously expanding globally. So there's something about like a protecting of something that's important. And then...
Look, if you think about Netflix, I mean, they went from CDs to streaming to physical experiences now. You know, they're building physical. So it's always entertainment repackaged, where what you're talking about GPS is Garmin taking GPS and repackaging it for different variations. And you're talking about the core cooking process kept with it and then repackaged in sort of new ways. So I think you're right. I mean, you want to keep your core the same, but then you want to be showing that you're evolving with how people are consuming your product and how it's easier for them to actually engage with it. Yeah, I like that. Okay, you keep your DNA, you just change the outer packaging of it.
Yeah, there's something about, I think if you have a DNA that you find is either working for you or that you just deeply cherish, it's just about how do I apply that DNA in a more evolved way, in a new way. I think that's the challenge. And I was speaking to a property company a few weeks ago, and they had a similar thing. And I'm sure you encounter this all the time, is that when I speak to them about, you know, evolving, what they always say to me is like, well, we don't want everything to evolve. Because there's parts of that they feel so sacred about, you know, that like that's so important to them that they've built over years and years, and they don't want that to actually change.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
my first instinct when I hear that is like I almost develop a bit of a resistance to that because I'm like, you need to be open to change anything. But then I'm like, well, maybe there are certain things that need to be protected so we can evolve like the, you know, the bigger thing. I still need to find a way to articulate that, but you hear where I'm going with that.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, and I think it's really great. Okay, look, I think that's a great segue into what you wanted to speak about.
Yeah, well, I wanted us to chat about it. I guess in a way, it's kind of related to this. It's again a series that I'm busy working on, and I wanted to see how this is applied in your life and how it's played out for you. So I'll lay out the premise. For a while now, I've been thinking about this idea of power moves. It's just kind of been in the back of my mind. And then recently I was like really sitting with it and thinking about it. And I thought that in our lives,
what are power moves?
So in our lives, we have moves that we are making all the time, right? Like we are always busy doing something. And for most of that, what you have is that through accumulation, through accretion, which we've spoken about many times on the pod, ultimately these things accumulate and they give you a certain outcome. And so therefore, we need to be very intentional with the things that we do in our lives. But then I think there are power moves. And a power move is when it creates a very clear before and after picture from that moment. That when you make a power move, it creates a new reality for you in the way that a normal move doesn't, right? Like if I upload a video on YouTube right now, like that's just me making another move. It won't drastically change my life in that one thing. But there are certain decisions or things that you do that once you've done that, it's created a new reality straight away, you know, and you don't have to wait for the compounding effect. So I've been sitting with this and I'm busy now, like compiling a series on this. I have a few like leaders and people that I want to showcase and the moves that they've made. But it's also been very reflective for me because I've been thinking, especially this year, how many power moves have I made? Like how many moves have I made where it's really been like pushing into a new realm? Like I'm sort of categorizing them in a little bit in a way, like where it's been pushing into a new realm or a bump in intensity or something that is like a larger effect after I've done it. And to be honest, I came up pretty short. Like I can think of a lot of moves that I've made. I can't think of a lot of power moves that I've made.
So do you think moving to Cape Town was a power move?
Yes, I do, because there was a clear before and after. If I had to go back through my life...
And getting your dogs was a power move?
For sure. If I go back through my life, things that I would classify as like power moves that I've made was quitting physio to start Better Man, quitting Better Man to start speaking and coaching. Releasing a book, I think, is a power move. The first time I got on stage, for me, that was a power move. Created a clear before and after. And then I'm thinking about like things I've done this year. I'm like, well, which power moves did I make this year where there was it created a new reality? And at least, I mean, I sat to this reflection this morning, the only one that I could really think of was the book that we brought out earlier this year. Like, and the power move here is just that it's a step up in intensity. You know, like we put out content all the time. To put out a book is a totally different amount of effort that you are putting into the world. But that was the only one that I could think of, dude.
Okay, but if you had to then dissect what a power move is, can you create a couple power moves for your future to see which one you want to step into? So that we can define the power move better and then say, well, am I willing to take this leap into the next power move? Like, how would you plan a power move? Or do they just happen naturally?
No, I think, perhaps there's a organic component to it, but I think for a lot of it, it's a really intentional thing that needs to happen. Before I answer the planning question, I want to just like know from you, like when you reflect on your year, how many power moves do you feel like you made this year?
I think breaking up with my ex-girlfriend was a power move. My dad passing away wasn't my doing, but it's definitely a brand new identity and a brand new timeline I've stepped into as the eldest son of a family now that used to have Brett at the helm and now my mom is, but I guess I'm the support there for my mom. I don't want to take anything away from her alphaness.
I appreciate that reflection because when I think of power move here, I'm not talking about it from a like dominant, like rah-rah power kind of thing.
I know that, but a new timeline.
But that's why I'm saying I appreciate that reflection, just so it's clear, because it's like you've stepped into a new power in that timeline. So yes,
it's not about my power. It's a new version, a request for a new version of me.
Yes.
You know what I have done, and I think it's such a good question. I've never really thought about it, but I did for my 50th decide that I really want to be more honest in my expression. And one of my very, very good friends, I had to have a very, very deep conversation with him about his relationship and stuff that he was blind to. And it was a very deep discussion. And I felt very, very good afterwards because I also felt like it was something that it was playing in my mind for months beforehand, before I could actually have the conversation. And it beautifully evolved into a place where he understood, he accepted, I could share openly and honestly with somebody that he's in love with, that from my perspective isn't always the right person. But I think that was a huge move for me on my part to just have that conversation. It also positioned me in a different place in that friendship. Not that I needed to change my space in the friendship. It was just that it was a big call for me to have such a deep conversation with him. And another friend of mine said to me, he said, this is what best friends are for, is to have these conversations that aren't always available to people that don't know your friends as well as you do, you know? So I think that was a big one. There's some things that have happened that I don't want to talk about online, that have also, that you know about, that have also been massively power moves for me. But I think the last big one that I had was moving to Dubai, to be honest. I can't think of another one.
It's an interesting reflection, right?
It's a good question.
Very interesting reflection.
Yeah, it's a very interesting reflection. Yeah.
So I've been, my idea of this series is that I want to identify power moves that people have made that have created clear before and afters. And I want to use that as reflections for myself. And it's quite interesting, and that's why I enjoy obviously these kinds of conversations as well, is that you start thinking about it in one way. You might just think, oh, a power move is like, it's a political like power move, but actually there's subtle nuance to it. And a power move could be, when defined as something that creates a clear before and after, that, oh, like me showing up in a relationship in a different way, that's a power move. And me wanting to show up in my personal life in a different way, saying I want to be more honest with people, for example, that's a power move if you stick to it and you can execute on it. So the first example that I'm using in my videos is from Apple, and it's Steve Jobs, obviously, that I'm profiling. And it's interesting, like when he left Apple because he was ousted, and he comes back. And he comes back to an Apple that's like bloated. They have 90 days of cash left in the business. They have 70 products or something stupid like that. They are actually like busy selling. They have so many different Macintosh models and Newton models. It's all over the show. So he's sitting in...
No, there was no Macintosh. There was no Macintosh because he invented the Macintosh when he came back. There was the Lisa computer.
Yeah, there was a Newton. There was like something, but they had...
Lisa.
They had tons of different models. So he's sitting in all these product review meetings. And then like after another meeting where people are saying like, these are the features, these are the products, these are the new, you know, he's like, stop, you know, this is insane. Like we can't, like if someone had to ask me what I should buy in Apple, I wouldn't be able to tell them what to buy because it's just so confusing. And so he stood up and he went to the whiteboard and he drew like a little 2x2 matrix. And on it, he wrote consumer and professional, desktop and portable. And he said to them, this is all we need. We need 4 great products, 1 for each of these quadrants, nothing else. And so in that moment, they slash Apple's product lineup by 70%. 70%. And it became so hectic that like if you were working on anything else, like Steve would go off on you. Like he was like, we are only focusing on 4 products. And as a result of this, a year later, Apple goes from losing $1 billion to making $309 million in profit. And so that to me was a power move because it hyper-focused people on what was most important. And as a result of that, it ends up laying the foundation for what becomes Apple's most revolutionary period in time. So I'm like, okay, so there's a few different ways we can make power moves. A power move is like, I can step up and into something and it can be me doing something bigger. It could be me doing something at a higher level of intensity. It could be me simplifying and focusing down on what's really most important. It could be me having difficult conversations with people in my life. It could be me going, well, I want to show up in a different way and I'm going to shift my identity. But it's just at a higher level, when I was reflecting, I was like, I make a lot of moves. I don't think I make enough power moves.
That's a very good reflection point. I would have to think about that. And I think maybe next time let's talk about what a power move could be. And let's actually break down what power moves are and are we stretching ourselves enough? Are we too much in a comfort zone? Are we also recycling old ideas that we're not seeing other power moves? I mean, it's such a good, it's like you're asking me to stretch out of my box of intentionality and goals. And I'm like, okay, wow. I need to actually think about this in a larger way.
It feels to me like dangerous 2.0, because it's the same catalyst that I had when I was writing Dangerous. Was like, yes, you could be in survival mode, you could be playing it safe, but there's this call to action, which is like, be more dangerous. And although I still speak about that often, like, I feel like this is maybe an evolution of it or an add-on to it. But again, just coming back to, we can't just show up how we show up by default. There has to be something more intentional about it. And so what I'm actually hoping that is that as I go through the process as well, is to be able to categorize it and to have very clear, like, oh, these are like the 8 power moves that you could make, and you use the right one at the right time.
Yes.
But then also like measure it, you know.
Yeah, but I think you could do it physically or emotionally or relationships or business or money. Or, you know, I think also buying, like taking a lot of my money and putting into Bitcoin was also a power move for me, if I think about it now, because my wealth has increased so much because of what Bitcoin's price is doing. And that's also like a power move into a new realm of money for me, you know. And taking that leap was a big leap. You know, it was like a huge leap to take, but it's paid off, thank God. I think another power move could have been buying my place in Dubai, you know?
Yeah, I think that
also could be a power move because that established me into a new city. It was a very physical representation of my commitment to this country and the city. I love it so much, and just wanting to be here is so fantastic. You know, I just love it so much. I mean, in complaining so much about the conference yesterday and the day before, I still have access to it. You know what I mean? It's still in one of the most amazing hotels in the world. There's so many pros that are there. And I've also made a commitment to myself to go to as many of these events as I possibly can while I'm in Dubai, because then why am I in Dubai if I'm not taking advantage of all these amazing people coming here? Half of them are talking shit, but I mean, the rest of it's just like, yeah, you're going to enjoy and, you know, and learn from them if I could, you know?
Cool, dude.
Either way.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for that reflection point, Eric. That was really, really good. Great pod as usual. For everybody listening, if you've gotten to this point, thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to seeing you again next week. Every week, we come out with a new podcast talking about the latest things that make us expansive. If you've enjoyed it, please do leave us a review on iTunes or on Spotify. And until next week, stay expansive. Ciao.